present do you feel in most situations? Between our phones, our busy minds, and all of the other distractions around us, it's challenging to control our attention. But if we're not focused on what we're paying attention to, then we can't be as intentional about our decisions, our thoughts, and our behaviors. My guest this week, Derek Johnson, is an Army veteran, life coach, and fitness trainer who shares his personal journey with childhood trauma and how he empowered himself to heal. We also explore simple, practical steps that you can use to gain control of your attention and take your power back. Thank you so much, as always, for listening.
Welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. My name is Kim Menninger, and as an executive coach and former high-tech leader, my personal mission is to help professionals overcome imposter syndrome so that you can advance your career with confidence. Each week, I interview a new guest who brings a powerful perspective to this conversation, including personal stories, best practices, and new insights. The more we talk about this issue, the more we destigmatize imposter syndrome, recognize that we're not alone, and empower ourselves to access the tools and resources that can help us and those around us. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing with others you think would benefit from this conversation.
Welcome, Derek. I'm so excited to talk to you today, and I would love to start by welcoming you and inviting you to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate you having me today. So my name is Derek Johnson. I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I did 10 years in the U.S. Army, 5 active and 5 in the National Guard in the state of Florida. And growing up, my father was Army. He did 25 plus years. And my father, he's actually a farmer. He grew up on a farm in Mississippi. So African-American, grew up on the farm, then went in the military. And then he met my mother, who's German, when he was stationed in Germany. They met in the discotheque. So years later, they had my 2 older sisters. And then I came, so I'm the baby of it. So in second grade, that's when we moved from Germany to the States. And we moved to Pensacola, Florida. So in the panhandle of Florida, or I like to call it Florabama. So if people are familiar with the Blue Angel Air Show, that's the home base of the Blue Angels, Roy Jones Jr., a lot of other stuff and a lot of athletes. But yeah, so I grew up in Pensacola. That's where I stayed from third grade throughout college. And then in the Guard, I traveled throughout the state of Florida. And then with military training, I was in different states, different countries, but most of my time period was spent throughout the state of Florida. And so I never wanted to go retire from the Army. I just always wanted to use it as a stepping stone, add to the resume, work on my leadership skills. I used to have a fear of heights as a child, so I knew that I would face that in the Army, helicopters and planes, so got over that. And I just knew that I had to get out of my shell. So as a child, I was very skinny. I was bullied. I had a really bad stuttering issue. So I knew that training my body and then enhancing my own self-confidence would help me in my career, in school, also in sports. So in middle school, at the age of 12, that's when I got really serious about exercise. So I picked up all the fitness magazines, bodybuilding books, Arnold's book, Bruce Lee's, any content that I could consume. And then by the age of 15, that's when I got certified as a personal trainer. And I started training my classmates, my teachers, my professors. And then around college and in my time in the military, I knew that I wanted to help people in a deeper way. Because growing up, my family, there's alcoholism on both sides. So I saw a lot of traumatic things with that. So I always wanted to help people in a deep way to get rid of any limiting beliefs, break any old patterns, get rid of the traumas. And once I was able to do that, I less likely had clients go backwards. Because everybody has lost weight or gained muscle and then lost the progress after that. So doing this, making a deeper mental impact, I less likely saw clients throughout the years go backwards because we at least got rid of the traumas, limiting beliefs, anything else that they were facing or patterns that they carried into every friendship, every business endeavor. So getting rid of all those things so they could thrive and not just feel like they're surviving. So internally, this path has just been to honestly heal my inner child who dealt with a lot of stuff. So now I empower other people to get to the next level if they feel like they're stuck. So it's just interesting how everything connects along the journey. And I feel like a lot of people that are passionate about what they do, if you learn their backstory, peel back the layers, it all makes sense why they took these paths or took these steps in life.
Absolutely. And if you're okay with it, I would love to ask you a couple follow-up questions about your own experience.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you're a child and you're being bullied and you're feeling insecure, and you know, that's a really tough time to be a person in general, right?
Yes,
100%. But then you layer on top of that those kinds of social traumas. What would you attribute your own sort of sense of empowerment or sense of control to, when so often it's easy to just feel like you have no power in those situations and maybe get swept in a totally different direction? Like how did you mentioned even thinking about the Army as an opportunity to address some of your own fears, and like, I know your dad was in the Army too. Was that something that he taught you? Like, how did you get to that place at such a young age to know I have the power to make different choices and do something about the things that I'm struggling with?
Great question. So I actually got massively obsessed with comeback stories. So I would pick up every book, movie, or interview online, and I would just like absorb the information from pro athletes, musicians, just anybody that's at the top of their industry. And I would just love learning about their story. And every single person I realized all had trauma to an extent, whether it was family related, foster home, childcare, their own trauma, like self-caused trauma. Sometimes it's not from other people, sometimes from ourselves. So learning about their past and their journey inspired me because it helped me flip my perspective. So in middle school, so at the age of 11, that's when it got really dark in my home. So 300 nights out of the year between 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., my parents would just release physically, emotionally, mentally, and all that, and release in a way that something that they went through in the past was coming out, but it was only when they would drink. The next day, they'd be up early. They never miss work. They're at the top of their game in their professional life. They're very popular. So I never mentioned anything to anyone because I didn't want to ruin their reputation because people knew them in different countries and all that, but they both grew up poor and went through a lot of things. So violence, just very dark things. And so I became the physical, verbal, emotional punching bag. And then by the age of 12, I made a promise to myself that I was no longer going to get bullied in the household, at home, and then in school. So the decision was to be to no longer be the skinny, scared, fearful, stuttering kid anymore, and to learn about how to quote unquote become a man. But I knew I had to start with myself, not to just fight people, because I wasn't violent at all unless I had to stand up to the bully. But one, I learned about the body. So I transformed my body and I was no longer the skinny kid. So I turned myself into an athlete. And then from there, daily, I was consuming information, books, media, interviews of people that went through things worse. And it would just always be in my mind to say, this is part of my comeback story. So I feel like one of my gifts, and people that have traumas are all given gifts, I believe. And one was discernment. So let's just say my parents or whoever was yelling at midnight and just like breaking glass and all this, I was able to pop out of myself, look at myself from a higher self, and then bounce to my child and look at my current self and say, what is the best decision you can make? And then from there, I stopped giving people, starting with family, the reaction that they expected. So they expected crying, they expected yelling back, they expected storming to the room. And I would just like stare them in their eye and not break eye contact. And every single time I did that, they got uncomfortable because it was different, because I was no longer the shy, insecure boy. And then I took that same mentality into school and I started facing my bullies, or even bullies that were messing with my friends. So it was a cultivation of fitness, mindset, and also knowing that this was all part of my comeback story, because I was so much consumed in other people's stories. And I was like, you know what? Mine could be worse. I have both parents. We have air conditioning in the state of Florida. I have food. We have a screened in pool. I was like, life is not that bad. I just got to deal with these alcoholic parents, and it is what it is. So I would always perspective hop, and I would just always tell myself that this is part of my journey, part of my comeback story. And I would just say it could be worse, because I knew individuals that didn't know their parents, were in and out of foster care. But most importantly, I didn't pretend that what was happening in my family was not happening. So I wasn't just trying to like overshadow it and get lost. It was more so a driving force. So another thing in regards to kids that go through trauma, I feel like in their adulthood, they give back to people what they didn't receive. So I didn't really receive the love and support, quote unquote. I got the discipline, I got the structure, I got the hey, do what you're told, whatever. I got that mentality. But on the flip side, there was no, we never really said, I love you. And there was no like joyful family dinners or breakfast. We usually would just eat in 5 minutes, not say a word, just leave. And we would never really talk about things that needed to be talked about. So that portion, I made sure to give my friends, my teachers, strangers in public, just the support, and I would just listen to them. So the older I got, it really made sense, because in hindsight, I would think and I would say, wow, some of my teachers would notice something was going on because they could tell my energy was just different, but I never said anything. I would just say, oh, you know, I'm just tired. And I just would never say what it was. And then I made sure to be that person for others, because if you've gone through things, you can usually sense it in their body language, how they look. So yeah, so it was a cultivation of one, fitness, two, getting literally obsessed with comeback stories. And then number three, I made the promise to myself to no longer give people, starting with family, the reaction that they expect. So I would pause, breathe, and then just really think about what is going to be the best outcome for my own mental health. And sometimes it was just agreeing with people. Like I would just agree. They're like, you're this and this. I was like, yeah, you're right. And then they don't know what to say. Like in my head, I was like, oh, I won that one. Now they're stumped. So I would just honestly play a mental game. But it did come from a combination of all the things that I was reading and learning. And the older I got, I realized that I was doing a lot of work in terms of psychology, like shadow work, perspective hopping, all these things that I didn't know actually existed or what they were called. I was doing that in my teenage years. And then when I started working with people, I was like, wow, this is actually really easy to connect and help empower people. And then in hindsight, I was like, well, I've been doing this since age 11 and 12. So it makes sense I went this path. But yeah, definitely those three things: fitness, absorbing information of comeback stories, and last but not least is to empower other people, to give them that, because I wasn't getting it at home. So I want to give everything back in a positive way rather than repeat the process of family curses or generations.
And it's really fascinating to me that you had the presence of mind at such a young age to do that, even though you may not have realized what you were doing. Clearly you were making a positive choice in a less than positive environment. And I think about that even today, where there are a lot of adults that don't have the self-awareness to recognize that there are other choices available to them. And I think one exactly. of the challenges that I see and talk about in the workplaces is the absence of what you're describing in terms of that pause and collecting yourself and not just reflexively reacting to the situation, because it becomes this spiral where we get triggered and then we respond and that triggers the other person and we just keep going back and forth and nobody's getting the best of each other in those situations. And so I'm curious how you think about helping other people who, you mentioned the fitness piece. I see, you know, you're sort of this embodiment of the mind-body connection. And I wonder, like, how do you think about helping other people through this psychological process as you're helping them with their fitness goals as well?
Yeah, great question. So a big thing that we do in regards to one of our first conversations, even if it's a stranger in public, like we just start the conversation. And then from there, I just ask people, I'm like, what are you most passionate about? Or if you did not get paid to do this thing, what would it be? I just love asking people questions that really make them stop and think, rather than the, hey, how's your day? Oh, you know, same thing, different day. Like I never ask people the generic questions. I love catching people off guard, but getting them to really start talking, but more so to show them that, hey, I'm actually listening. Because at the end of the day, every human just wants two things. We want to feel understood and we want to be heard. Even children, like they throw the temper tantrum, like, watch me. If daddy's not watching, it's like, shut up and sit down. Like we just want to be heard and understood. So giving that to somebody. So an example is anytime that I see that somebody's passionate about whatever they're into, I just keep asking more questions, because that actually gets me motivated. Even if I have zero interest in whatever they do or know nothing about it, I just love the energy of people that are super passionate about what they do, because most people, they're just like, oh, you know, and it's really draining, because they might be a positive person, but there's no life for life or energy for life, really. So when I meet people that do have a passion for something, so let's just say that I see that maybe they're a designer, they just have a unique outfit. I ask them like, hey, what was your idea on this? And they're like, oh, somebody's actually asking me about what I have on or whatever they're into. And then slowly they start to open up. But in regards to a coaching aspect, is one of the first things that I do is we create a eliminate sheet. So we grab a pen and paper, and then we ask ourselves, what are things that I'm doing that are holding myself from making progress towards my goals. And we first start with what we eat and what we drink. So we start with the basics. He or she's probably like, hey, you know what? I want to drink less sodas or sweet tea. All right, let's write that down. Hey, I want to binge watch Netflix less, or I want to stop scrolling so much and get sucked into the rabbit hole of jumping from app to app. Everybody has a loop and a pattern. Like we get bored, we open up TikTok, Instagram, email. 20 minutes later, we're like, oh shit, how did I get here? So basically we write down all those things. What is he or she drinking, eating? What are they consuming? And then after that, they're more open. And then they really think about it and say, you know what? My reactions to my boss, my team, my manager, my spouse, my reactions to people in traffic, whatever their reaction is. And then at the end, we just go through those things one by one, whatever they wrote, and we're just guiding them. So they open up more, but most importantly, they're transparent with themselves and neutral, as in they're not judgmental. They're not angry at themselves for it. They're just calm because we already had a positive conversation first. And then we talk about what can we eliminate rather than starting off the conversation like, hey, what do you not like about yourself? Please write it down. Like, I never go with that approach. Like military, that's how they are, but that doesn't work. So opening up, showing that we're here and we're actually listening, and then have them write that out. But from there, you can usually pinpoint the one or two main things that they truly need to get rid of or replace with something that's more positive. And then from there, they start to have clarity. So what we're truly aiming for is to have more light bulb moments. Anytime an individual has more clarity, they slowly start to get their power back where they're like, huh, this is why I respond this way, or that is why I crave carbs, or this is why I'm doing this at work, and really just giving them those moments. And then from there, that's when we start to plan programming, particularly regarding the big thing. Maybe it is trauma. Maybe it is a bad relationship with food that happened from being bullied at 12. And then they look at carbs in a bad way. Like it's always something deeper than just, I want to lose weight. I want to become a better public speaker. It usually stems from a past traumatic or dark experience. Somebody said something or did something, which is why they're not good at that thing. Or maybe they think they suck at it, whatever the case is. But that's generally what I do, is I have open-ended questions, get them to open up about what they're passionate about or excited about. And then from there, we go deeper into their eliminate sheet. And they write out those things. And then at that point, we can discuss their schedule, their routine. So I always approach it this way rather than, hey, when do you wake up? What are you doing this? Hey, so Monday, let's do this. Tuesday, let's do that. By 12 p.m., you need to have 50 grams of carbs. And it's way too overwhelming to add to the routine or schedule. So we first take some things away. What could we get rid of that's slowing you down or keeping you back? And usually is the small things, but they do those things on a daily basis, whether that's food, scrolling, comparing themselves to others online. So it's usually a lot of things related to social media. There is a positive in it, but for many people, that's why they have imposter syndrome or comparing issues or other things, because they feel that they're not enough. And then they don't realize that not everyone, but most, they're just playing a character online, that they're showing the highlight reel, or they're just using Photoshop, Facetune, and everything else. But that's a whole nother rabbit hole.
That's exactly right. And I think that there is so much value, like you said, in giving people the space to have those light bulb moments, because I think we're just on autopilot for so much of our lives because we're so busy and we've got so many different things coming at us at all times, that unless we create the space to slow down and actually think, if this has been my coping mechanism my whole life, I'm not going to question it. That's just, it becomes a habit and it's one less thing to think about. And so if that means, you know, binge eating something that you know you isn't healthy for you, or scrolling through social media in those moments when you have, you know, a break and you want to fill your time, it just isn't even an intentional behavior. And I think that just creating the space is so important, because you're not going to change if you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly. 100%. So that's a huge thing that we do, is after those conversations, we actually, on a deeper level, we identify their patterns. So you can always tell. So an example could be person A, they need the drill sergeant. They need somebody to be blunt, upfront, direct. They're just like, I'm lazy. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And they just need that abrupt. And then that's what you give them. And that's what's good for them. And as a good leader, you can see what he or she needs. Others, you could tell that we're going to have to take our time with them. We're first going to have to establish some trust, ask some good questions, go from there. They're still going to make progress, And it's not about the speed. It's just more so the trust. And then once they start to have the light bulbs go off, and I like to call it stacking wins. So if that individual wakes up at 6 a.m., how many wins can they have stacked by 10 a.m.? Hey, they chose water over sweet tea. They didn't put the artificial stuff and sweetener into their coffee. They worked out. They didn't hit snooze. Most people, they hit snooze five times and they create their own anxiety and they're reactive all day. So they hit every green light on the way to work or to the gym. Whatever the thing is, I always challenge them to be hyper aware of those things, because that part of the brain and the subconscious is going to look for more wins or positive things. Super interesting. You probably have heard it from Tony Robbins. He speaks about it a lot, is the reticular activating system. Mm-hmm. It's a portion of the brain that hyperfixates on things. So an easy example most people could relate to is a car. So let's just say you're a teenager and you play the punch buggy game and there's a yellow Volkswagen Beetle. You see one, you're going to start seeing Beetles everywhere. And be like, I never knew this many Beetles were in my neighborhood or in my city. And the brain is like, look to the left. Oh my God, there's another one. There's another one. You're like, what the hell is going on? That portion is the reticular activating system in the brain. And so like with a car example, same thing with media or anything that's toxic and negative, the brain fixates on those things, but we can actually train it to focus on what we do want. And we could start it by just acknowledging that, hey, you're doing well. You chose this over that. You did this, you're that. And you slowly start to build that energy where that person's self-confidence goes up, their self-trust skyrockets, and they're just like, wow, I've actually been in a better mood. I'm not thinking about what's happening overseas, what happened in my past, what my ex did, if I had a divorce, like all my friends are married and have kids and I don't, like whatever the thought is, they're more intentional, like you said, and they're just focused on the next thing. And they're just in an empowered state where they're like, wow, I've done a lot by 11 a.m. I worked out, I did this, sent my emails, ready to get their Monday presentation at work. And they're just looking for the next thing and they're vibrating much higher. So being able to see an individual in that state is empowering, because maybe it's been years or if ever that they were in that state. And then they realize at the end of their day, they kind of come back down and they're like, wow, I got so much done. I didn't have an intrusive thought. I didn't overthink my lunch, looking at the food, thinking good or bad. I was just there and in flow state. And being able to show somebody how to get into that is super beneficial, because then most importantly, their friends, their family, everybody in their circle, their team, coworkers, staff, they can feel it as well, where people are like, wow, what is he or she on? Like they're so in this zone. And it's amazing to see, because we can all create a ripple effect. For most, it's a negative ripple effect, but for good leaders, they create that positive ripple effect. And I mean, today we're recording this on a Monday, but especially in the Army and like companies that I work for throughout college, is I would always pay attention to the Monday meetings, Monday formation, Monday meetings. And I'd always look at the individuals. I was like, please don't start this off negative. I'm like, you're going to tear away everybody's morale. And there's always somebody, especially in sales, like, hey, last Friday, we didn't hit our numbers. It's like, it's 9 a.m. on a Monday. Why are you like, save that to the end and ask people what their goals are for the week. But it's crazy how common that is, that just a lot of leaders don't think about that. Like they start with the negative in a Monday meeting or at breakfast with their family and spouse. Like this week we need to do this. It's like you just ruined everybody's mood before the day's even started. So really taking a step back, but it usually stems from an internal thing. Maybe that person hit snooze five times. Maybe they are dehydrated and they drink their coffee. Now their heart rate's up. Maybe they're stuck in traffic and they're just releasing that energy at work, not knowing it. They're just doing it on autopilot. But going back to what you said, helping people to become more intentional and more present. I feel like the biggest issue right now with most people is they're rarely present. They're always thinking about something else, the past, their pain. What's this athlete doing? What am I going to have for lunch? It's like their mind is always somewhere else, or they try to be present and then all the notifications on their phone just gets them off track. And they're just like, I can't even do deep work because Papa John sent me an email. My friend liked my picture on Instagram and this popped up. Lululemon has some new shorts that are like, their brain's just everywhere. So they don't have control of their attention. So that's another huge thing that I try to teach people, is help them to gain control of their attention again. Because I feel like, in my opinion, that's a huge issue of why people can't make much progress, because they literally can't be present one or focus on one thing more than 10 minutes. And outside of ADD or ADHD, but just in general, it's all these apps, notifications, and treating everything as if it's an emergency has people's anxiety so high, where they're like, oh, I got this email, then I got that, then I got that text, then I got it. And you're just like, let's slow down. What is most important? Let's start with that.
Yeah. Well, and I love that empowerment behind what you're saying, because there is so much of life that feels out of our control. There are so many ways in which we feel like we're at the mercy of the people around us, whether that's our boss or our children, or, you know, whoever's making the loudest demands on our time and our attention. But what you're talking about is that we have choices of what we choose to focus in on, and that that has a cumulative effect on how we show up in our lives and in relationship to the people around us. And I think so much of it is that the default setting most of the time is negative. And so yes, it's about making the choice to retrain your brain to look at the positive, so that you start to build a new habit in place of the default negative one. And so I love it, because I talk about this a lot too in the context of confidence in the workplace. Is we're always so quick to say, I can't believe I said that in the meeting. But if you come out of the meeting and then you say, but what went well, right? What am I proud of?
Yes.
You just keep
exactly.
Just keep reintroducing the positives. Eventually your brain starts to, like you said, with the reticular activating system, it's like, oh yeah, that actually works, right? And then you get the benefit and you keep doing it.
Exactly. And I like how you mentioned that, because people don't realize how often and frequent they do that. They're like, oh, you know, the meeting didn't go the good. Oh, I could have did better on that. Oh, I paused too long in the presentation. Oh, I hit my numbers, but my personal one, it's not going to give me. And it's the same thing in reverse. Like, I notice very common nowadays is people get very uncomfortable when they receive a genuine compliment. It could be work-related. Somebody could say, wow, you crushed it at the presentation. Challenging that person to pause and say thank you without thinking that they're arrogant. Just saying, like, you did do well. They genuinely mean this. Just say thanks. But the auto response is, oh, you know, I'm not that good. I could have did better. And, you know, Mel Robbins is a much better female speaker than me. And then they go on a rant and it's just like, they just gave you a genuine compliment. Like, you literally crush it. Like, just accept it. So that right there, it's so common for people to do that. And that's a huge thing that I challenge people to do, is speak to strangers in public and give people more genuine compliments. It could be as simple as you're at the gas station, you just say, hey, nice color. I've never seen, what is that color called? Like, they have a nice color car and they're like, oh, this is actually blah, blah, blah. You're like, oh, cool. What made you choose that? Just having a normal conversation for 30 seconds, make somebody's moment, make their day. Because on the reverse, we've all had a day or a moment that we were in a very low state, or we had RBF and we're like, nobody's going to approach me. And somebody spoke to them and they're like, wow, I didn't realize I needed that interaction. Maybe they're in the grocery store and a little kid says something funny, or the grandma asked them why they got this pasta over that, and then she told you a story about her grandkids. She used to cook this. And you get to the car, you're like, well, I'm about to break down in a positive way, because they had a good, positive human interaction. And maybe they had the worst day ever, but they were like, wow, I didn't realize how much I needed this one little interaction, 2 minutes. So thinking of that, we've all had those moments. If we can give others those more, we train that part of the brain as well for look more for the positive. And we're not just trying to have a ton of conversations all day long, but just giving a kind gesture, you'd be surprised what happens. Like, hey, nice shirt. Or, hey, you look hydrated today. Your skin's glowing. Or like, oh, thanks. Like, whatever it is. And you start to look for more of those things and it elevates somebody. The last thing, one of my first sales trainers years ago in college, he always challenged me. He's like, I know you're in the military and you don't really smile much. You have military bearing, but he was like, when you're on the phone, smile more. And he's like, when you're making these phone calls, before you hit dial, just smile. He's like, before you hit dial, smile. And I was like, okay. And then I started smiling more. And he was like, so how did this week go? Numbers kept going up. And I was like, yeah, I'm in a better mood. I'm not overthinking. He's like, yeah, just sometimes you got to fake the smile and it turns into something real. So nowadays I smile way more because I'm not in the military anymore, because I used to just have that serious face. And sometimes it helps in a fitness standpoint or athletic standpoint. But the rest of the day, I'm like, I can't be in this zone all day. Like, it's not my personality. I'm just going to be pissed off for no reason. So that was a huge thing that helped me, is just literally just smile more, even if I don't want to.
That's true. And I feel like there's research that shows that when you smile, you actually feel better. And so I love what you're describing too. I think that is a fantastic tip for anyone listening, that reaching out and connecting with people out in the world, because it's so simple to do, but such a missed opportunity so often. And it's funny that we're having this conversation now, because last weekend, I happened to be taking my car in to get it serviced, and the woman who was writing the paperwork was really serious, and I loved the color of her nail polish. It's like, I love that color. And her whole body language changed. Everything between us changed. And so it's not even just for the other person, it's for you too. It's like you walk out of there feeling like, ah,
business. Oh yeah.
Change in the energy for everybody involved. And then it becomes contagious. And if you think about, if you are ever the recipient of that kind of experience from somebody, then you're more likely to pass it along to the next person. And then we all have
exactly
the power to change the mood, right? So I just think that is such a great tip for connection, for confidence building, for just changing the way our brains focus and what we think about.
And I think what it helps the most as well is it helps people to become more present, because everyone's on their phone at work, in public, in the restaurant, the family's not even present. But when people just genuinely start to give compliments, it forces them to literally just make eye contact and speak. And then everybody starts feeling better because they're like, wow, I've been staring at this thing all day. Like, we're all doing the autopilot thing. So a huge thing that I do a lot, like, we live in a building, we use the elevator. And every time I'm in the elevator, even if I don't feel like it, I force myself to talk to whoever's in the elevator. Even if I just got to crack a joke. I'm like, I hate the cringe feeling when people are in the elevator and everybody looks at their phone, knowing none of us have service. Like, what are we doing? We're just all being awkward, checking our email, the emails that do open. Like, I just hate that, those moments. So I just always try to say something positive or funny or random, or I'll just like jump and they're like, what? I'm like, nothing, just kidding. How are you doing today? But just giving people those moments and then like getting them out of their zone so they become more present. They're like, wow, I was about to be in a terrible mood all day and I was scrolling for no reason. But making yourself present, helping others become more present, and you realize that a lot of the negative self-talk that we have is because we're always thinking about something else and we're not present. So an example could be, they have a presentation or a team meeting and they can ask themselves, what makes me feel confident? You know what? That black shirt or that blue or that burgundy coat, whatever their attire is for work, or hey, let me do my hair like this, or today I'm going to go get a haircut. Whatever that thing is, what makes that individual feel confident and doing more of those things so they can show up in a different state instead of, oh, you know what? I got to give that Monday presentation. I'm not going to do well. If he or she wears the outfit that makes them confident, they're going to, number one, do much better. They're going to show up in a different zone. People are going to feel that. They're going to be like, wow, something's different about them. And it doesn't even matter what the outfit is. It's all about them and energy. But if you think about it, people, because of the past couple of years, a lot of us work remote. So people, like, they're not putting on things that do make them feel confident. They're just wearing their pajama pants in the bottom, but they don't realize that, yes, it's comfortable at first, it was cool, but they're actually being less productive because their brain doesn't know. They're like, when you put these things on, you relax and watch Netflix. But now we're supposed to work and focus. And I got these like fuzzy slippers on, like whatever it is. But I always ask my clients, I'm like, our calls are like this, it's face to face. And I just ask them like, hey, what are you in? They're like, I'm in this and this. I'm like, all right, let's go change those and get in the zone. And they're like, wow, that actually helped. So I'm like, look, just start doing that more. And what would you wear to the office if you're not at the office? Like, it'll actually help your confidence and you'll be way more present.
That is such a great point. You're absolutely right. We've had a lot of freedom to, you know, be very relaxed.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing I want to add to this conversation that really connects back to what you said very early on is that we're talking a lot about what we can do in interactions with other people. But I also think it's important to recognize and have the self-awareness not to let somebody else's negative energy hijack your mood or experience too, right? Because, I mean, you talked about this in the context of your parents, which is probably the hardest work that anybody can do. But so often we are sort of subject to the moods of our boss or the people around us at work. And we could be in a good place and all of a sudden that goes out the window because the people around us are having a bad day. And I wonder if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit more too about just having the willpower to resist taking on somebody else's mood and kind of not giving your power away by letting them and their state control how you see yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Great question. So I have this thing I call the 10-minute rule. So the 10-minute rule is essentially you give yourself 10 minutes to release whatever you need to release. If it's tears, cry. If you literally just got to grab the steering wheel in the parking lot and just yell and cuss, like, let it out. If you got to blast Metallica or some dark music and just do it. You got 10 minutes. If you need to just have peace and quiet and hydrate, you got to do that. So whatever that individual feels like they actually need, and it's usually it's a release. It doesn't always have to be aggression or a bunch of sadness. Maybe sometimes they're just like, they just need to laugh or they just need to let something out. If they can release whatever that thing is, they can reset. And they tell themselves, how long do I allow myself to be in this state? I know the boss was pissed off at the Monday meeting. I know I didn't personally hit the numbers, but it's the beginning of the week. How am I going to hit my numbers this week or whatever the personal goal is? And they'd first just have to like go outside. If they're able to, I always challenge people, step outside first. Go to nature. Just look at whatever's around you. Stretch, move the body, breathe. Really take in all of the senses. Use all five senses to take in what's around you. Look at the bird. Where does it fly? What do you smell? Like, what do you taste in the air? Is there a chemtrail or is it a beautiful sky? Like whatever's there, and really just take in all this stuff and make yourself smile and laugh. And the next thing you know, you're like, all right, let me breathe. You know what? I haven't really hydrated today. Let me go back inside, drink some water. Okay, my meeting starts in 10 minutes. Let's go to the next thing. But if they can just have a 10-minute reset, all you're trying to do is become neutral again. We're not trying to get overly hype. We're not trying to put ourselves low. It's more so, I think the best leaders, they have the best emotional awareness and emotional control. So they're like that smooth wave. He or she might be angry. They might be in a dark place. Something might be happening in their personal life, but you'll never know because they're that smooth wave. They have control of their reactions, their emotions. So giving yourself that 10-minute window, you can do a lot. Go to the bathroom, do a breathing exercise, like whatever the setting is, but you're giving yourself a timer. And what I ask people when they're in that state, whether it's aggression, sadness, or whatever, I literally am just blunt. I say, hey, I can tell there's something on your mind. How long do you want to feel like this? And at first they're just like 5 minutes. And then they start smiling and I'm just like, no, legitimately, how long do you want to feel this way? And then like, they don't know how to answer it at first, but they start smiling. I'm like, all right, 3 minutes. I'll see you in a bit. And then like, I'll come back. And then I'm like, so how do you feel? And they're like, good. I'm like, what'd you do? Like, I just yelled out the F word like 10 times, like, awesome. All right, you ready to continue? Cool, let's do it. And then like, they're just smiling. And then they start to catch themselves. They're like, wow, I used to give up my power and allow family, friend, boss, stranger at the mall, wherever, somebody in traffic, allow me to stay in this state for 10 minutes, for an hour, for 2 days, or they bring it home to work. Excuse me, they bring it home from work and then family, friend, spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, they're just like, I cooked you an amazing dinner, but your energy's so off. Can you eat outside? Like, I don't even want to be around you. So that goes right back to it. What is the 10 minutes? What can you do within 10 minutes to become neutral again? And the majority of the time is just releasing and also taking a deep breath outside. Lay the phone down, just go outside. What can you do to reset? Do that thing and tell yourself that nobody else has control of me. So he or she is not going to control my outcome of the rest of my day, the rest of my month, the rest of my week. And if people intentionally do this more often, they'll be surprised how quick they can take control again. So we're just being realists in this state. So we're not saying that nobody's going to make you angry, not going to be sad. We're saying life will still happen, but whoever's going to win long-term has more control of their reaction. And there's a lot you can do within 10 minutes to come back down or to come back up. Maybe the person's in a low state, but first changing the physiology, stepping outside, resetting, and then continuing their day, whatever's next. But that's a huge thing that would benefit most, I think everyone, because we've all felt it to an extent. Like we'll hold it and we can feel we're about to erupt or something, or about to break down and cry. Like we've all been that person or seen that person at work when you're like, please don't ask her a question. She's just going to break down. Just make her smile. And I was like, what? Like, how do you not notice she's that close to popping the lid off? Like, just be aware of that. And that just goes back to being present and being aware. So for leaders, for managers, if they can start to really read their staff's body language or their team's body language, they'll be able to tell so much. Like with the Monday meeting, if they can tell everyone is stressed on the call or if it's in person, they can say, you know what? Let's start off with a 2-minute funny video on YouTube. Everybody's cracking up. Oh my God, that was amazing. Hey, what are you most excited about this week? Awesome. What was your favorite thing you did over the weekend? Perfect. All right. What is your goal for this week that you want to hit? Change up the whole dynamic. Then at the end, you could be like, all right, so everybody sucked last week. What are we going to do better this week? And they're like, all right, we're going to do, and you get the same outcome in a much better way. Like you still talk about not hitting the numbers as a team last week, but it's just the approach rather than, I call it the old school corporate outdated leadership, where it's just like, rah, 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 buy the book, and everybody hates being there. The energy is off. And we're just trying to make it the opposite of that. So resetting within 10 minutes, being present with yourself, reading your own body language, and then seeing if you can read others to elevate that. Because sometimes you just need to say like, hey, I noticed there's a lot on everybody's mind. Let's do a 5-minute brain dump. Everybody grab a sheet of paper, write out what's bothering you the most. If you're comfortable to read it out loud, let's read it out loud. Or everybody grab the set of matches. Let's all light it on fire. Like I did that in the Army a few times. We all write whatever's annoying us. And then we write it on a sheet of paper, grab the paper, get a lighter, and everybody's burning their sheet of paper. And then like everybody's body language within 2 minutes just changes. It's amazing. So just get creative. You know, your people, that's what I always challenge people to do.
I love the power and practicality of what you're sharing, because so much of what we're talking about is hard stuff, right? Especially for people who are not thinking about this, who have not been doing this work for a while. It might feel like, I don't even know where to begin and I don't have time for this. And you've given us some really great, simple steps to take as at least a starting point. I am really grateful. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about you and your work?
I appreciate it. So they can find me on social media. I can just type in Derek Johnson, D-E-R-I-C-K. Same picture on every platform. My favorite app is Instagram. That is Fit with Derek 2, the number 2. And my coaching website is fitwithderek.com. They'll see a combination of fitness clients and then also some that is just life coaching regarding their life journey. So I have pictures and videos, and I just like showing videos of real people with real results because the internet gets a little fishy. So people look the same, but most importantly, they can feel the person's energy where they mention like, hey, I had a divorce. I was in a dark place. Worked on this, worked on that, overcame the trauma. Now I got a promotion, got a raise, had my first date in 3 years, like whatever it is. Hearing that person's personal story and journey is always the most beneficial because it shows like their energy and you can't replicate that. So my whole intent with social media is just to plant seeds. I'm the guy that's going to make somebody uncomfortable when they're hitting snooze too much. And they're like, yeah, he called me out in that video. I need to put these snacks down. That's as long as I'm planting a seed, if somebody likes me or doesn't, it's cool. But as long as I can get them to stop wasting their potential, that's my whole intent.
I love it, Derek. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Kim. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Imposter Syndrome Files. If you would like to continue this conversation in a safe and trusted space, I would love for you to join my virtual discussion group every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. For the past several years, the group has been limited to women, but it is now open, regardless of gender, to anyone who is interested in exploring and troubleshooting common workplace challenges, building better awareness of ourselves and others, and becoming more inclusive allies at work. Check out the show notes for more info on how to find us, and please join us next week for another episode of the Imposter Syndrome Files.